news, sports, AccuWeather, and more. Wake up with the information you need on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
Thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. Mark Lawrence here. Now, Rob Center gets the week off, so hopefully he's enjoying some really fine R&R and enjoying this gorgeous warm weather that we have this week. On the newsline with us now, Dr. Laura Putnam is here. She's a full professor in the Department of History at the University of Pittsburgh. She has been researching through most of her career social movements and political participation. This idea of pop-up grassroots organizations has been her specialty. And Laura, if you don't mind my saying, well then, this is your time. This idea,
yeah, absolutely,
with all these groups popping up and counter-protesters in a couple of spots and so on. So thank you so much for joining us. You've been studying pop-up organizations within the Rust Belt of Pennsylvania and the U.S. and widely publicized, so we really appreciate you carving out time for us. When a grassroots organization or any sort of a pop-up group starts to form, what's the recipe that is typically in place before that happens?
You know, it's usually the case that something has happened that's moved people out of their usual space of thinking about politics, which, you know, whether people are happy or sad with any particular politician, really lots of people don't think that much about politics and politicians, and they don't necessarily think about themselves as having an active role to play in politics. Or in sort of standing up publicly for a particular view. But when something happens that feels just like a real violation, that pushes them, you know, too far, makes them feel like, you know, my voice needs to be heard. And there are two pieces of that. Usually there's something that they're reacting against, and there's a pattern that they're following or an inspiration that they're following. So they're both reacting against and reacting for or reacting with. And so we've seen these waves. You know, there was the Tea Party wave in Pennsylvania and beyond in 2009. There were the women's marches in reaction to the election of Donald Trump in 2017. And then we've seen this spring, really importantly, coalescing in a literally unprecedented number of places. America has never seen such a broad and widespread protest movement as with Black Lives Matter sympathy protests in the months of this spring.
Well, if that's the recipe, then what are the ingredients this time? The death of George Floyd, of course, very tragic. That murder is, really inspiring to people who want to take action. But that's not the only ingredient that went into this.
You're exactly right. I think there's a combination of different factors. But first of all, you know, the video of George Floyd dying hit home for so many people. Of course, it hit home for people of color. It hit home for African Americans, for whom it didn't maybe feel new, for people who've, you know, been aware of over-policing or police violence within their communities. But it also hit home for a lot of other people, white people, people in areas where they may personally feel really smooth relationships with local police, but who saw that video with the bystanders, not just one policeman, but with multiple people there not stepping in to intervene, and said, this is wrong. And many people said, you know, it's not about politics, it's about ethics. Even if whatever political party I may or may not identify with, maybe I don't even think about voting, but I need to stand up and be heard and say, this is not the America I want to be part of.
Sometimes the groups are peaceful. They stand at a corner. So often you could drive by and maybe not even notice that they're there. Other times, a little bit more in your face. Sometimes on the road blocking traffic. Sometimes turning violent. Sometimes looting. Tell me about the continuum of activism that develops in these groups.
So the first thing I'll say is that there has only been any violence or, as you say, looting in a minuscule fraction of the total number of protests that have been held. But rumors about that and video image and, you know, media images of, you know, things set on fire or broken glass have been really, you know, overplayed compared to what the real pattern that we see when we look at the data. There have been in just the month of June, the final days of May and the month of June, in Pennsylvania alone, there were more than 400 different protests in support of Black Lives Matter held at 230 different communities statewide. So that's an order of magnitude bigger than the number of Tea Party protests or Women's March protests. And the vast, enormous majority of all of those protests were, folks standing, chanting peacefully, possibly blocking traffic in order to call attention to what they were, exercising their right to speak out about.
If I were only to give this a cursory glance, I would say social media plays a big part in this. But these kinds of pop-up groups and things happen long before Facebook or Twitter or Instagram help keep this going.
You're right about both parts of that. So protests have a long tradition, and learning about protests by, seeing what folks the one town over were doing and feeling inspired to stand up in front of your neighbors and take part as well, that has a long history in America. But it's absolutely the case that folks have been communicating about their, reaction to the killing of George Floyd and other killings and injustices, and people have seen via social media protests elsewhere, and they've thought about, and that's also inspired them to get involved. And here I'd say, really importantly, it's been young people in place after place who've been the leaders and the main participants in protests in support of Black Lives Matter and in support of racial justice. And that's been true in the smallest towns with the smallest African-American populations. It's been true in bigger cities and communities that are heavily people of color, Latino or Black African-American. It's been young people. It's been people, high school students, people just out of high school. And they've often, shared ideas about getting together to make their voices heard via Instagram. So it's not even, you and I may be on Facebook because, we're not young, but they are young and they're communicating through different social media channels. And they're part of a national awareness and sort of awakening among young people, which has issues of race front and center.
There are often times when whomever is not a part of the group or maybe actually opposes the group says, why don't you do something better? I mean, people look at the Black Lives Matter protests and say, well, why don't you fix what's going on in Chicago or Philadelphia instead? Or might have looked at Tea Party rallies and said, well, why don't you get involved in politics instead of just protesting? What's your reaction to that, this idea that there's always sort of this deflective, not knee-jerk, that's not precisely what the word I'm looking for, but there's always this deflective reaction?
So the striking thing is that when people become politically active, when they take a step forward in their own communities to say, here's what I stand for, here are the values that I need you to know are motivating me, and here's what I see is wrong in our society, there's almost always both a national piece to that and a local piece to where it takes them. So even when people are motivated, people's sort of initial motivation in getting onto the streets may be about the video that they've seen from Minneapolis, very rapidly, and we're seeing this in this case, in place after place, there are local issues that resonate that have to do with whether it's school curriculum, what's being taught in our high schools about African-American history, why aren't we doing a better job of covering this history, or whether it's about, in state college issues of use of force and what steps the police should be taking to ensure that people who need mental health aren't met with armed police and misunderstanding instead. So in place after place, there's one or more local issues around policing and racial justice, which very rapidly comes to the fore in terms of what people who stand up locally to protest are focused on. People are so good at finding concrete, meaningful, achievable local targets for political action once they get out of their houses, once they get out of their own, headspace and say, hey, we can do something to make our community better. Here's the thing that I'm going to organize people around to try to make some progress.
Do we almost always see joining participation afterward as some of the, maybe the groups and the protests start to subside, then you see joining of, maybe existing governmental groups, councils or so on, or maybe just joining the Democratic Party, the mainstream Democratic Party, the Republican Party?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So even when people don't think that, that going to a protest is going to carry them into more active participation in electoral politics and local institutions like exactly the ones that you've named, in place after place and time after time, that's just what happens. And we see this in national data, and we see this in local data. Because what draws people into, you know, political action and into things like voting and being an active participant in the civic life of their communities, it's about relationships and connections. It's the people who you know, who, you know, invite you and say, hey, come down, can you come speak at the next city council meeting? Because the issue that you're raising is going to be up for debate, and your voice would be, it'd be great to hear your voice there. Or maybe they meet a local elected official who says, you know, I'd really, you know, can I come speak to folks in your neighborhood? Because I'm running a campaign and I want to speak out. So building those connections, and maybe sometimes that leads to someone who led a protest finding that they have a really important voice and getting recruited to run for local school board. And we saw this with the Tea Party protests, we saw it with the women's marches and associated marches, and I have every reason to think that we're going to see this, indeed we're already seeing this, rising out of these Black Lives Matter protests. And part of what's so important there, again, is that it's been young people at the forefront, and in so many places, young people had not been particular, this generation of young people had not been particularly politically involved or civically involved. It's not necessarily young people that, you know, the most privileged young people in America always get the message that their voice counts in politics. You know, folks who are going off to fancy schools and so on. But regular young people in America, folks who are, you know, trying to make it work to get together the tuition payment for community college, they are not always getting the message in this country that their voice is essential to our political process. And when folks are getting pulled in through these protests to a more active role in their communities, that's really valuable.
Well, you study the Rust Belt extensively, so elaborate on this idea that in an area that may have had a boom time and now has more of a decline, that's another one of these ingredients for this recipe for formation of groups and protests and then eventually even more action.
Yeah, what's ironic is that it's often, you know, the communities that have been hit hardest by economic disinvestment don't tend to be the ones where there's sort of an active civic and political movement that's, you know, demanding better and demanding new policies, even when those might be the communities where who'd be most benefited by, you know, shifts in large-scale political directions or reinvestment or so on. Because if people are just getting by, if you know, times are harder every year, jobs are fewer, people are taking more jobs just to make the ends meet, those are things that really get in the way of civic participation, both in terms of your time and in terms of your attention. You know, if you're just focused on paying the bills and managing childcare, it can be really hard to think, oh, yeah, and I'm going to make time for that civic meeting next week. So for all those reasons, you know, hardship tends to not go hand in hand with political protest or with sustained political action, because hardship is hard. So it's particularly important then when in, you know, communities that have been dealing with long-term disinvestment, loss of jobs, when there's a political movement that does pull people, you know, out of their homes and inspires people to meet each other and find that there could be a possibility for some collective solutions, that it could be worth investing some time and some hope in making change, that's really valuable.
Any last observation or answer you'd like to give us? I'm forever amazed at good guests that I interview that say, Mark, you forgot to ask me the most important question of all. What's the most important answer of all, Laura?
Well, I think that a key here is that local action makes it possible for people to listen to other people and listen to where they're coming from in a way that's much healthier for our democracy than when we're just experiencing, you know, protests or labels like Black Lives Matter through the screen of our TV or through Facebook memes or so on. So if there's going to be, if you hear that someone's holding a protest in support of racial justice or over any other issue within your community, you might want to just show up and listen, whatever your own politics are. And you might be surprised by seeing who in your community is there taking part, and you might learn from what their perspective is.
Well, thank you so much. I very much appreciate it. I will invite you to come back on the show again. Just a great set of responses, highly informative. Thank you so much, Dr. Putnam. Thanks for calling in today.
Thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That is Dr. Laura Putnam, a professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh, a researcher of social movements, this idea of pop-up and grassroots organizations popping up throughout our nation, throughout history. You can hear the rest of our discussion now on the WDKOK podcast page.